welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. My guest today is Malcolm Penn, a 50-year semiconductor industry veteran and founder of Future Horizons. Good morning, Malcolm.
Hi, Dan. Good morning.
So we talked last year, and that was a very widely listened to podcast. And we just want to talk a little bit more this year about what happened and maybe what's going to, what we look forward to happening in 2022. Does that sound good, Malcolm?
That sounds great. Yes, thank you.
So last year, you predicted an 18% growth for the chip industry in 2021. And you took some heat for it as being very optimistic. I was of the same mind. I actually was thinking 15 to maybe 20%. But, you know, we were right or very close to being right. You know, how do you account for that, Malcolm? Are we just lucky or did we actually know something?
No, it wasn't luck. I mean, it really wasn't. I think when we came up with that forecast, we actually said that the number we were predicting was 18%, but we also caveated that with a 24% upside because we really couldn't see any downside risk at all to the industry growth, only upside. And yes, you're right. We did take a bit of heat for that and were branded as being eternally optimistic. But it wasn't because we were optimistic, although we are. We love the chip industry and we believe in its future. So we are optimistic. But this wasn't due to optimism. We just looked at all of the data that we normally look at, which is basically the economy, the unit demand growth, the capacity and the average selling price. And all we could see was, based on the momentum coming out of 2020 going into 2021, we were already seeing tight capacity, some sign of shortages. And that combination is a powerful combination to trigger a market boom. And we said that it's going to be at least 18% and there will be shortages throughout the whole year.
Yeah, well, it looks like we hit 25% or 24%. What do you think the final number is for 2020?
Yeah, it's going to come in around about 26%, between 25-26%. Yeah, so I mean, this is one of those real classic booms.
Yeah, I think the last one I experienced was in 2010, where we hit a 30%. That's the biggest jump I've seen in my career. But that was right after the big real estate dump here in the United States in 2008, you know, when we did a lot of speculation and bad mortgages. So that was a big rebound type of thing. So is this a rebound? Because, you know, in 2019, we didn't have a great year. 2020 was a good year, double digit year, I think. And, you know, 2021, 26, 25%, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But then when you look at it over the whole history of the industry, I mean, it is not that unusual. This actually was the 16th boom in the industry. So we've been through it 15 times before, and four of them were actually higher than last year. We had a 35% growth in 76, 32% growth in 83, 29% growth in 93, and even 2010 was 32%. So it was number five in the hit parade list of market booms, but it just felt very, very strong because we haven't had one for a while. We used to joke about there being three good years and one bad. And if you take 16 recessions in kind of like 60 plus years of the industry, that works out about every 4 or 5 years on average. But the average hasn't been that consistent. And we've had a period of relatively calm in the industry. And I think it's that caught everybody by surprise. And yes, these booms are a rebound. They're always the consequence of an undercapacity. And overcapacity is always the cause of a market downturn. And the overcapacity could be caused when what it's normally caused by is an economic collapse of some sort, like you're talking about that housing crisis, the mortgage crisis that you were referring to. It's usually triggered by an economic recession. But sometimes it can be triggered by other things. But mostly, it's an overcapacity is what normally triggers that downturn.
Yeah, so if you look at 2021, I mean, there's a few things in play here. One of them is increased demand due to COVID, of course. And another is, the shortage narrative. Everybody was so scared, and a lot of orders were cut in 2019, and so there was some catching up. But there seemed to be a lot of glutting in the supply chain. So people were buying up capacity. They're buying chips off the shelf, and then they were, gouging prices to their, throughout the chain. And automotive saw this primarily because they see a lot of hands touch the chips by the time they get them, right?
Yeah.
And even TSMC said, inventories are seasonally high, and that means that people are bulking up. They're not doing just-in-time inventory, that they're, doing what we call now a just-in-case. They're bulking up. So, we saw some demand that was based on cut orders from the previous years. We saw some demand based on the COVID situation, people buying, all sorts of equipment for home and such. And then we saw the price gouging, and there was also some price uplifts from companies. TSMC is not really raising prices per se because they have wafer agreements, so they're contractually bound to pricing. But if you're signing a new agreement, pricing will go up. But we really haven't seen that yet because those chips are going to be coming out, next year or the year after. But TSMC does charge more if you go outside of your wafer agreement. So if you're buying extra chips, you're going to pay more. But I'm just wondering, what's the mix? Is the increased revenue, is that really affected by the pricing increases we've seen, or is that more just we're just squeezing out capacity everywhere?
Well, no, I think it's both of those things, Dan. I mean, the prices always do increase when you go into a shortage situation, but there's a 12-month delay from the unit growth starting to kick in for the ASP starting to accelerate and increase above the average norm there. So we only really saw some ASP increases towards the middle of last year. So they haven't really kicked in because of what you say, the long-term supply agreements and all those kind of issues there. But it is happening and it's inevitable. I mean, if you've got a short supply, you're going to sell to the highest market, where you get the most money, where you get the most revenue, where you get the most profit. That's a classic way to behave in any market where it's driven by those issues. So I think that's inevitable. What worries me is the fact that we do seem to be building inventory, and the lead times have stretched. So therefore, we've not only got to cover that extended lead time period where people are buying just in case, and they're double ordering, they're buying more than they need, and eventually that bubble is going to burst. And when it does burst, it will just drop like a rock because suddenly the lead time will go from 30 weeks, 40 weeks, whatever it is, down to 0, 2 weeks on demand whenever you want it. Suddenly firms are ending up with half a year's inventory. And that's got to be liquidated. And while they're liquidating that inventory, they're not going to buy anything. The classic equation is that demand equals orders equals demand plus or minus inventory. And right now it's plus inventory. That would turn to minus inventory, and suddenly sales would just plummet.
Yeah, and I'm also wondering. So I agree with you on the pricing. I see pricing. So I'm on calls with the supply chain during the week, and the lead times have just been increasing dramatically. And they talk about GPUs, for example. And of course, if there's huge GPU demand from because of Bitcoin or because of the gaming, a lot of people are gaming much more now that they're working at home, I would expect. But NVIDIA is going to get higher prices, so yeah, I understand that. But I just didn't think that that was a really big cause of the revenue jump. I think what you said about inventory is increasing, I think that's big because we haven't seen that in a while due to the availability of these chips. But I also wonder about the automotive guys. They say that they're losing billions and billions of dollars because they can't get the chips. But the automotive industry is a little bit different than TSMC, for example. TSMC builds fabs based on customer orders. And if customers do a good job in their ordering, they're going to have enough capacity. If customers undershoot it, they're not. If they overshoot it, they're going to have a glut. But the automotive guys, they just build cars, you know, and based on forecasts. And that's a very competitive industry, right? Because you can go buy any car if you really want to. But I'm just wondering how many of these cars are waiting for chips, or how many of them really, you know, wouldn't have been sold anyway because of the reduction in demand. You know, I'm driving less. I think everybody's driving less. So I think the automotive companies are sending, you know, the wrong signal.
Yeah, I mean, we'll never know the true answer to that question because no one tells us. And you don't know what they could have sold had they had the parts there, because it's pure conjecture. But I mean, I think the problem with the automotive suppliers is they seem to really not understand the dynamics of the chip industry. And they're just in time fixation just doesn't work when it takes 4 to 6 months to build their chips. I mean, canceling is easy. You switch off the light, it's canceled. But starting up again is horrendous and takes weeks and months to do that. And you can't just do that. So I think, you know, they obviously did lose some sales because they couldn't get their parts there. And they would have been silly. All they had to do was stockpile them. They don't go bad. They don't go obsolete. They'll always be able to use them. They just had to stock them. And then they wouldn't have had the problem.
Yeah, I read one automotive executive saying, yeah, we can't ship cars because of a $3 part. And, you know, I'm just thinking back in my mind, why didn't you have a bunch of those $3 parts, you know, in inventory? What would have been that big of a deal? But anyway, you know, that they've learned. And the other thing about the automotive industry is I think they're changing to they're going to start building more of their own chips. And this is based on this experience of shortages. It's also based on Tesla. You know, they're making their own chips and they're going to have to compete with Tesla. And you know, I just read about a guy who hacked his Tesla that now he can do crypto mining when he's not driving his car. His car actually does crypto mining because Tesla has a huge amount of compute power behind it. But you know, other car companies are going to follow suit, just like phone companies followed Apple into their own Silicon Endeavor. And I see it on SemiWiki. All the automotive companies are on SemiWiki now. First, it was just Tesla about 6-7 years ago. Now it's everybody. So I think that's going to be a big change there. And that's one of the ways they're going to be able to justify spending money on chip building, you know, because of the chip shortage narrative.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think this OEM direct model is really going to be the big game changer for the coming decade. And the automotive guys are going to have to follow suit. Otherwise, they'll just be locked out of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we see it with EDA, because EDA is kind of the first step when you do a design start. And the EDA industry has hit double digits, you know, for the last year or so. And that's unheard of, you know, in that industry. You know, I've been in the EDA industry most of my career, and it's single digits or flat. You know, sometimes we're happy it was flat because it did decline. But boy, I tell you, they've been on a tear, and that'll tell you, you know, more people are designing chips because EDA industry sells per seat, right? Per seat per year subscription licenses. And we're going to be running the quarterly numbers that just come out for last year. And we're going to be running that tomorrow with the EDA consortium. But I'm guessing that 2021 is going to be a record year. And that's because these system companies are doing their own chips now.
Yes. And I think, you know, the EDA guys and the foundries have done a super job of making it easy for system companies to design their own chips. And they have the revenue base to finance it because, you know, one of the numbers that we often show to people is the semiconductor industry itself makes $9 a square centimeter of silicon processed. But the end users actually end up making 5 times that amount. So they got a much bigger revenue base on which to fund chip design. And if you're an Apple where you're selling services on top of that, you make 50 times the revenue per square centimeter. So the numbers just speak for themselves. For them to design chips, it's relatively small beer.
Yeah, and you know, the systems companies spend a lot more money designing chips. They're not under the margin constraints that a fabless company is. You know, they're developing a chip that they're going to sell, and they're only going to make X amount of dollars on it, whereas Google is developing chips that they're going to make billions of dollars because they're using it internally for their cloud and other products. And yeah, Apple is a good example as well. So I see boom years ahead again for EDA and the semiconductor industry, which is a good transition to the next question. What's going to happen 2022, Malcolm? We're going to hold you to it. We're going to hold you to it. Be careful.
That's the big question, okay? If it was a normal year, with taking up the momentum that we're going into 2022, you'd probably be looking at a growth of around 10%, something like that. The big concern I have is this is actually now the third year of consecutive growth, and that's now you're in danger land. And at some point in time, with all the investment that's going into new capacity, that's going to start to come on stream sometime this year. And the danger is, if it all comes on too quickly, it will simply tip us into overcapacity and the market could collapse. So that 10% is a very, very unsafe number in many ways. It could go to low single digits. I mean, worst case, it could even go negative. It's happened before. And the chances are it could happen again. It's all about timing. When will supply meet demand? And the very second that it does, the market will collapse.
Right. Yeah, especially if supply exceeds demand. But I think 2022 is going to be another good year for a couple of reasons. One is I think additional supply is going to be slower than we thought. And this is partly, or this is primarily because of COVID. We're not able to get the workers out there, and building fabs is a lot of work. And when you're having to deal with COVID protocols and rampant COVID, as we are in the United States, it's going to be hard to get those fabs built. And there's also supply chain issues because the fabs, have a lot of parts and pieces that go into it. But I don't think, I think it's going to be a big year for a couple of reasons. One is I don't think supply is going to increase as fast as we had hoped or as fast as it normally would, and that's due to COVID and all these new strains. And two is I think that the applications that we're seeing, AI specifically, and of course 5G, are going to demand a lot more silicon than we had planned. AI really is touching just about everything that we build as far as systems and chips. There are AI specific chips, and even non-AI specific chips are getting AI accelerators in them, and that's increasing the size of the dies, and that's eating up wafers. So I'm saying I think next year is going to be a good year. I don't think we're going to hit supply and demand equaling out. I think it's going to be 2023. I'm saying 10%, maybe 15%. I think double digits next year, low double digits. But with COVID, I tell you, it's really hard to predict. When COVID first hit, everybody cut their orders, and I was of the same thing. I cut all my expenses. We hunkered down and not knowing what was going to happen, and we overshot it for sure. We were way too frugal, but I think most of the companies were. But now we're just kind of scratching our head, wondering, what's going to happen in 2022 and again 2023.
Yeah, I mean it is uncertain. I mean the only advice we tend to give to people is come into work every day, enjoy the boom, but expect it to end tomorrow, okay? And be prepared. Have a plan in your pocket ready of what are you going to do when the market does turn, because it will turn, but the only uncertainty is exactly when it will turn. And it's kind of like we'll be getting through it on a quarter by quarter basis. If we get through the first quarter, that's great. That takes us into the second. We get through the second quarter, that's great because Q3 is always a good quarter. Get through the third quarter, okay, what happens in the fourth quarter, which is normally relatively slow? So is that going to occur just as the capacity ramp takes off? Bingo, crash. You just got to
Right.
watch it quarter
Yeah,
by quarter.
TSMC is what I watch, and they just did their December numbers, and they had a record month, December, and a very good quarter. I think it'll be telling when they come up with their quarterly report later this month, because I'm pretty sure they're going to say customer inventories are seasonally high. That's their way of saying, hey, people are holding a lot of chips, so we're probably going to see a little softer quarter coming. Because at some point in time, the inventories are going to be high enough and people are going to be confident that we've got this COVID thing figured out one way or the other, and then they're going to stop. Not only are they going to stop building inventory, but they're going to start eating into their inventory, and that's going to cause a little bit of a speed bump. So, but I think the first half of 2022 is going to be pretty strong, and then I'm expecting a speed bump after that.
Well, that's the hope, and I mean we're hoping that as well. But it is this big inventory issue, and the trouble is nobody really knows exactly how much inventory is out there.
Right. Right. Well, once they get that, you know, $3 chip put in that car so they can go out and sell it, I think they're going to be in for a surprise, because, you know, I'm sure there's some built up demand for cars. But I mean, me personally, we're driving less. You know, my miles went from 10,000 a year to, you know, under 5,000. I think I'm at 3,000 for 2021. You know, we generally keep our cars for 10 years, which is about 100,000 miles. And my wife and I are both due for cars, but you know, our driving is so low, we're probably going to hang on for another 2 to 3, maybe 4 years. And yeah. I think a lot of people are like that. But boy, I tell you, I see a lot of brand new cars flying around. So somebody's buying them.
Yeah. And the thing is also, a 10-year-old car is nowhere near as old as a 10-year-old car was 20 years ago. I mean, it's still a nice vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing we have is we want some of the new safety features, right? We have cameras in our cars, but they're not as good as the new ones. You know, the new ones are really, really slick, and they have a lot of the safety features about lane changing and automatic braking and stuff. And but we're not necessarily sold on that, but you know, it's something we're definitely looking at. And we don't have an electric vehicle yet, so that's probably something that's in our future. But you know, we're in a wait and see, and I think that's probably going to last another year or two. And I'm sure there's other people with similar concerns.
Yeah, but that in a way is the good thing, that the really beautiful thing about the chip industry, it keeps creating all these must-have products that eventually we're all suckers and we all succumb to it. And we all sign up and go out and buy.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we also updated our electronics this year. We really overspent this year. And so next year is probably going to be a lighter year for my family. But, you know, we got all new phones, and, you know, Apple announced them. And I went in, I expected to wait months to get my new phones and a new iPad, and they shipped within a week. So I didn't see a shortage. And I have a sailboat, and I just got new electronics. It was that time to upgrade them. And boy, the electronics showed up, but now the people who install it have COVID. So I couldn't even get my boat cleaned. My boat cleaner has COVID, the guy who, you know, scrubs the boat. So I think we're going to see a lot of that this year, at least in the first half of the supply chain. But, you know, Malcolm, one of my other concerns is not just, you know, not having workers because of COVID, but not having enough semiconductor people. I mean, you know, we say we're going to build all these fabs, and you know, things are booming, and all these system companies are designing chips. And I see my friends on LinkedIn going to systems companies now instead of chip companies. But, you know, where are we going to backfill all these slots? Where are we going to find all these people to man this new capacity?
Yeah. I mean, if all these plans really come to fruition, well, they won't, because you're right. There isn't that resource out there to fulfill that demand. So I suppose in a way it will become self-limiting, like these things usually do. But I mean, yeah, there's an extraordinary amount of professed expansion going on. But I guess that really just tells you it won't happen in the way it's being envisaged.
Yeah, you know, SimuWiki added a job board a couple of years ago, and we did it to support our sponsoring companies, and, you know, just give them another reason to click from our site to their site, because all of our sponsoring companies, they look for clicks, right? They see who's the top referring site, and we want it to be SimuWiki. So we added the job board, and it's fully automated. But it's incredible, because I get to see, you know, how many people look at these jobs and how many click over. And of course, TSMC is a big hirer, and so we have hundreds of TSMC jobs. But you know, I don't know how many of them are filled, but the average job gets 600 views, and that's a lot, because it used to be 50 to 100. But you know, maybe there's a lot of people looking a lot of jobs, but I just wonder how they're filling these things. Because, you know, we're throwing expansion numbers of in the hundreds of billions of dollars, right? And this is just TSMC, Intel, and Samsung, right? Everybody, and Micron just did a huge announcement. They're gonna build some big capacity. But well, I tell you, I don't see where the people are gonna come, and that's a big concern. So that might save us from the overcapacity issue.
Well, with luck, yes, these things are self-fulfilling and self-regulating in a way, and thankfully. So hopefully it will calm down some of the excesses. And I guess also there's less companies all vying for this now. Back in the day when you had 20 chip companies all aiming for 10% market share and building capacity to fulfill that, you did have a really serious problem. But now it's a little bit more controlled. And these things do self-regulate.
Well, given all that, what we talked about, I'm pretty firm on my number, 10-15% growth. And, you know, I wish I could be more accurate, but there's too many things in play here. So what is your number for 2022? What's your high and low?
Well, we got our annual industry update event in 10 days' time, and I'm still working on massaging the final number. At the moment, it looks like it's in the 10% kind of range. But I just want to still run through the different scenarios. We always come up with a bull and a bear scenario built around our forecast. And it's looking to be like the forecast will be around 10%. There's probably not much upside on that. And the thing that concerns me is the real extent of the downside and how that might impact. So that's what we're currently doing over the next few days.
Yeah, I agree. There's going to be, we're in a bubble and it's going to pop at some point in time. The question is when, right? So it could be, you know, second half, could be next year, but yeah, I agree with you. So last time we talked, it was right after your event. So I forgot, your event is coming up. So tell us about the event real quick and how we can get involved and get a ticket.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's we used to do this as a live event, but for the last three times we've done it as a webinar, and that's proved actually to be more successful because it means we can expand the captive audience geographically much more than we could do when it was held in one geographic location. It's next Tuesday, Tuesday week, the 18th of January. We run it at 3 p.m. the UK time, which is a little early for the people in the West Coast, but it's still doable. It's like 7 a.m. And it also just about takes in the Far East at midnight if they want to stay up late. It's a one-hour event, and it just looks at the forecast and our view on what we think is going to happen. And the one thing we always try to do on this event is to explain why we have this belief, this number, this forecast, not just simply present a number. We always explain the rationale behind it. And we always go over what we said last time, what went right, what went wrong, and what the customers can learn from that. You can sign up as a webinar. There is a link. And Dan, we're very happy to offer SemiWiki members a 40% discount on the normal fee. So if they want to take advantage of that, we love the community. We think it's doing a great job. And our contribution would be to allow people, a broader audience, to join in at a special SemiWiki rate.
Yeah, I'll put that in the notes. We'll have a link in there. Yeah, I think you already sent me the link. And we'll see, you know, what kind of interest we can generate. I'll definitely be there. You know, the slides alone are worth the time. I mean, in the live events I've been to, used to buy us lunch, which was nice. I used to say I will blog for food, but getting your slides is the value. So, you know, I want to see it live, and so I'll definitely see you then. 7 o'clock is not early for me, not with this COVID thing. I work, you know, 7 to 7, really.
Right. No, the slides are everything. We always give the slides out to people, and we always encourage Q&A, both before, after, and during the event. So we treat it as a real forum, a real interactive discussion, because that's where the value is.
Great, great. Well, thanks for your time, Malcolm, and thanks again for the invite. I will definitely see you next week.
Dan, thank you very much for inviting me again. It's always a pleasure, and have a good day.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.